You are now online with Andrea, with your host, Andrea Garrison.
Good afternoon. Welcome. You are online with Andrea. I am your host, Andrea Garrison. I'd like to encourage all of our listeners to practice the universal law of giving by doing whatever you can to reach out to help others. Our topic today is the book, Listen to Succeed, How to Identify and Overcome Barriers to Effective Listening. And our guest is author Leslie B. Shore. Hello, Leslie. How are you today?
I am wonderful, Andrea. How are you?
Oh, I'm just fine. I have to tell you, I was so excited when I heard about your book, Listen to Succeed. I said, wow. Listening is so important, and I don't know that we think about it enough. And I think that a lot of us think we're listening when we're not. So I was excited about your book, the topic. So if you could tell us what inspired your initial interest in listening, and would you say that listening is an art?
Well, I'd say first and foremost that what inspired me to get into working with listening is the fact that I had a grandmother and a pair of parents who were absolutely superb listeners. And as a result, they made everyone in their presence, when they were listening, they made everyone feel important. Everyone's self-esteem rose as they were being listened to by either my grandmother or my parents. And I grew up in that. And I realized that it was something I wanted to be able to give to others.
Now, how old were you when you noticed that?
Well, because with my grandmother especially, I did walks down to the Howard Johnson's in Brookline, Massachusetts every Saturday, and we would have these mini clinics in talking and listening. And I noticed at that point, on the way back from that walk, on the other side of the street, we would be going into and by small shops, and everyone knew my grandmother. And when she would talk to the grocery clerk and say to him, "How did your son do pitching last week in Little League?" he would just puff up and feel so heard and not invisible that I recognized immediately that she was having a huge effect on the people that she was listening to. Not talking to, listening to. And I think I was probably about the age of 14 or 15 when on some level I realized why my Grammy was different and what she was doing to make other people feel different in her presence.
So your grandmother and your parents are truly special in more ways than one.
Truly, truly.
So you could actually see a distinct difference then. In fact, you recognized early on when people were not listening, correct?
Oh, absolutely. One of the biggest things that people do not realize about listening is that part of listening is using your eyes, and using your eyes to look at what is the body language, what are the facial expressions of the people that you are observing. Because in your listening, you can actually see what their mood is, whether or not they even believe what it is that they're saying, and a multitude of other things that puts you in a position in a conversation of really knowing what is going on with that other person.
Yeah, I wanted to read a little excerpt from your book. It says, These effective listeners understand that listening does not mean just waiting for our turn to respond. They understand that listening effectively is the key to increased knowledge, emotional intelligence, business success, career mobility, and productive and growing relationships. As effective listeners, they have learned to put aside their egos and attend to the person they are listening to.
And that's a huge part of how listening is different from active listening, which is a kind of a buzzword, and from hearing. And one of the things that I really like to have my readers know and your listeners understand is that we are born being able to hear if we're lucky, and we think that because we can hear that we're also listening. But hearing is physiology, and listening is actually a process. Something comes in, and because of your history, your emotions, how you've grown up, you actually attach things to what is coming in at you. You actually attach things to it, and so you're processing with what I call the film of ego attached, and you're not actually receiving purely what the other person is saying. And that's what makes listening a skill. It's something that we absolutely can improve upon every single day.
So we really have to learn to listen, and you learn to listen very early on because of your grandmother and because of your parents, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I will tell you that in terms of how I grew up, we ate dinner as a family every single night until my brother started to do basketball in the middle of winter. But what happened at that family dinner was that there was no talking over each other. There wasn't interrupting. My parents had very strict rules about let the person finish. And we learned as children to respect the other person, let them finish, and oh my gosh, as my grandmother said, wait for the period of the end, at the end of the sentence before even formulating a reply. So we got a lot of practice.
Wow, that's amazing. I think that's beautiful that you had that exposure so early on, because I'm not so sure that many of us really get that. I mean, we've all heard the children should be, what is that expression?
Children should be seen and not heard.
So, I mean, so they know how to keep you quiet. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're listening if you're quiet, right?
Oh, my goodness, that is so true. Sometimes if you're quiet, what you're doing is formulating in your head or on a rant about what the person has said or a word that they have used, and you're not listening at all. Being quiet just happens to be behaviorally what your mouth isn't doing. It's not really saying what your brain is doing.
And it's important for us to get it, because you say in your book, how do longtime CEOs stay at the top? How do athletes and coaches enjoy such long careers? How do actors and directors continue to make a multitude of successful films? How do inventors continually come up with new products? How do long married couples stay married? What do parents do to bring up well-adjusted children? What keeps salespeople at the top of their game? The skill of listening effectively. Though all of these groups of people have different talents and skills, they all have one skill in common: the ability to listen effectively.
And this is something that I want the world to get. It's something that I think people really are beginning to look for. What is it that I can do that can change a relationship that I'm in that can change a situation at work, that can have my doctor actually listen to me when I'm telling him what is going on with me. It's something I believe that we're looking for in a culture that is now so fast and so electronic in nature that speed is the thing that everyone wants to use to get things across. And I think people realize that we need to slow down and listen, but they've never had any training to do that.
Yeah.
Even our medical schools, there are only two medical schools in the United States that have a course on listening. And that tells you something about the very people that should be listening to us the most.
Right.
Are left to their own devices in terms of how they grew up in their family and what the norms were in their family in terms of listening.
So tell us, what's the difference between hearing and listening? And why is it important for us to understand the difference?
Well, I'm going to give it to you in two ways. Hearing is pure 100% physiology. It's the intake of sound, period. That is what hearing is. When we talk about listening, we are talking about the skill of processing what you are hearing with your ears and seeing with your eyes in terms of the person who is speaking to you. And it's not just a conversation that we need to use listening skills with. I happen to love jazz. I happen to love blues. So when I go and I see groups live, my listening is absolutely at its utmost height because I really want to get everything those musicians are trying to say through their instruments. And that's the same thing with listening to a conversation. Let's get everything that person is trying to say into our brains without the film of ego, without our history attached to it, so that we can really be able to formulate a reply that is based on what they have said and not our immediate reaction to what they have said.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it makes me wonder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just makes it's just, what can we do? I mean, I know the benefits of listening. I mean, because when you really listen to someone, you really connect with them on a very deep level. And they can feel that, correct?
Absolutely.
I was thinking about what you said about your grandmother when she would talk to someone and then she'd ask them next week about their son or whatever in the baseball game. And it's like, wow, she remembered what I told her last week.
Right.
She took it in.
Right.
And
took it in.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that I think is interesting, someone said, oh, your grandmother just had a good memory. And I said, no, that's not it. In order to even get it into your memory, you have to be effectively listening. And I put the word effectively in front of listening because I talk a lot about what the barriers are that get in the way. And I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit later. But the thing is that when Grammy was listening, it was her intense curiosity that really allowed what was coming towards her to go all the way into that brain without having anything attached to it. And that's what allowed her to be able to ask that question about the Little League game. That's what allowed her to be able to say to me, so how did you do with the paper that you wrote on Fitzgerald? And I had passed that paper in 2 weeks ago, and she remembered, and it wasn't memory, though. It was that she was so effectively listening to me, it was there for her to pull up.
Well, she also knew, excuse me, that it was important to you at the time that you were telling her that. She knew that it was important, and that's why, and she cares. She cared about you, and that is why she followed up 2 weeks later and said, by the way, how did you do on that paper? Because she cares, and she shows that she cares by listening. Now, I think that there are probably people who care about, I mean, a person, but they may just not realize that they're not listening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe at that particular time, they're more focused on themselves than the other person. And then that kind of shuts the other person up, doesn't it? It's like, oh, they're not listening.
Well, mm-hmm. Yeah, that body language, when you are speaking to someone or you're trying to have a conversation with someone and you are looking at their body language, everything from the 1,000-yard stare in terms of their eyes going straight past you to constantly looking at their cell phone to rocking back and forth to tapping the foot, to the eyes that are darting one way or another, you can get a good feeling that they're not really listening. They may be pretending, but it gets pretty obvious if you're looking at that body language that they're not listening. And that is a downer.
Yeah. Yeah, go
ahead. And those who are listening to you, there's no question, even in a business, even in a business situation, if you know you are being listened to, your self-esteem takes a nice little jump, and that nice little jump allows you to possibly say some things that you normally wouldn't have said, but could be the very things that are necessary in that conversation to move possibly a very big solution forward. And it's all because someone cared enough to really effectively listen. And great managers, great CEOs are superb listeners.
Yeah, you know what I was thinking, you know, a lot of people say they multitask and, you know, they'll be looking down at something, a piece of paper or looking on their cell phone, which is probably more common now. And oh, go ahead. I'm listening. What do you think about that with all this? I have to tell you something really interesting. I was in a grocery store one day last year, and I'll never forget this because it really made an impression on me. There was a woman in the grocery store with her baby in the cart. The baby was maybe 10 months old, and the baby started bouncing a little bit like, you know, I'm ready to get out of here. And so the mother didn't say anything to the baby, didn't look at the baby, didn't give the baby any eye contact. She didn't say like, oh, you know, we're in the grocery store. We have to shop. We need to get food so you can eat. Nothing. She didn't explain. All she did was hand the baby the cell phone. And so there was no eye contact between the mother and the child. The baby was about 10 months old. I couldn't believe it. Maybe 11 months old. The baby picked up the cell. When she handed her the cell phone, the baby's eyes like gleamed with excitement. Like, wow, you know, the phone. And the baby started hitting buttons like this. She's done this before. And she was happy. But I thought to myself, now this is sad. And I said, now, what is this baby learning at this point, and I'm wondering what is going to happen if we continue to go this way. What happens to this 11-month-old baby, you know, when she's three, if her mother, whenever, you know, she begins to speak, she just hands her an object, a phone. And that becomes her interaction. And so then the baby doesn't know the beauty of looking into someone's eye. She doesn't mm-hmm. know how to have the eye contact that you talked about, you know, that your grandmother has, how she would look at the person. You know, that's going away, don't you think?
Well, I think your story brings up so many things in terms of communication and how these things are beginning to affect the way babies are socialized, and the fact that we have many more reactive detachment syndrome issues coming up, because if a baby is actually doing their communication with the cell phone and not a human being, that is something that they will grow up doing and will not find it easy out in the world to be sociable, to be able to have conversations, to understand that the world is not just them and this piece of electronics, but it is truly made out of me, my mom, my dad, my siblings, eventually my friends, etc. It's a sad commentary on what is going on, and it is sad. I would agree, Andrea, that what we're looking at is our modes of communication and our modes of parenting are kind of coming together in a very jarring way that will affect especially this upcoming generation that we're hitting now that we don't even have a name for.
Yeah, and for some, you know, and I was thinking, you know, I keep seeing your grandmother looking at this person in the eye, and mm-hmm. and I'm thinking to myself, you know, about the modern age now where people are multitasking and they're texting rather than talking to people. Oh, just text me, or and what that is going to mean for our future. And I guess that's why I was so excited about your topic, because hopefully with your book and your work and the work of others, that people can see the importance of having those real connections and real conversations.
I think one of the things that is really important to understand is that when you make a decision to become a more effective listener, everyone around you, as they see what you are doing and how you are making them feel because you have made a decision to do that and are doing the things to improve your skills, they end up wanting more of that. And they end up literally taking some of your behaviors and integrating it into the way they communicate. You can have an effect on 100 people by becoming a more effective listener because of the way you're making them feel. And guess what happens? If they become more effective listeners, then they're going to make you feel the same way. It's a great back and forth type situation. And I think that that old phrase, a rising tide floats all boats, that's what we're talking about here. As each of us become more effective communicators and especially more effective listeners, the people around us will do the same also.
Yeah, because it's something about it. It really softens the human spirit, wouldn't you say? when mm-hmm. when you're able to speak to someone and they listen to you?
Well, I think one of the things that happens is when you know you're truly being listened to, your defenses go down. And you are able to be more of who you are, speak the way you would normally speak, and know in knowing that you're being heard, what really begins to happen is that there's a transparency that comes about. There are things that normally maybe you wouldn't say because you'd be afraid of a little bit of conflict, but you feel very comfortable saying, knowing that the person that is listening will take it in a pure way and in a way that they know that you care enough to say something. And that will go back and forth and back and forth. And it may seem like utopia, but honestly, it isn't. It really does work.
Well, actually, if you have a really warm conversation with someone and you're able to open up and know that they're listening, it is kind of a utopia, right? It's a special moment, really.
It really is. And I would say that when you have a friend that you've had for the last 25 years, what that speaks to is a kind of communication and listening that are between the two of you that just handles everything. It can handle a conflict. It can handle 6 months of not talking to each other for whatever reason. But the bond is so great in that relationship because of the type of listening that has been done on both sides. It can withstand anything.
Right. Now, if you can just, we've been talking about effective listening, but I feel like we need to break it down a little bit more. And if you could explain, what is effective listening? And you've explained the benefits of it, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what is it exactly? And then if you could talk about being present. And how does one practice the art of being present? Because that's part of listening, right? Effective listening?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, for me, it's the first of the four keys of effective listening. Being present is number one because it is number one. it is being in the present moment, not anywhere else. Your whole mind, your whole body is not only there, but actually in the shoes of the other person. You are so into the moment that your normal ego and emotional thinking part of your brain is just simply pushed aside. It's not gone, but it's pushed aside. And being present is that thing that we're not comparing ourselves to the speaker. We're not making assumptions about the speaker. We're not wishing that we were somewhere else. What we are doing is being incredibly in the moment with that other person and actually almost in that other person while they're speaking, so we can get what they're saying in a pure way.
But what about in a conversation, though? When actually the roles reverse, you become the speaker, the listener, and then the other person, speaker, listener. How do you do that successfully? You know what I mean? When you're having an exchange, a conversation.
First, be comfortable with silence. I think, especially as Americans, we are not comfortable with silence. And one of the things that my grandmother said was, listen without judgment and wait for the period at the end of the sentence before formulating a reply. Now, that happens to answer part of your question as well as being the second key. And what I mean by that is when we change from being the speaker to the listener, we then have to understand that silence is a good thing, both on our part while we're listening and also on our part while we are taking in what they're saying and formulating what our reply is, having heard everything that has been said. On the speaker's part, being present actually also means, are you looking at the person who's listening to you? Are you seeing what their body language is? Have their eyes glazed over? Are they fidgety? Or are they leaning forward? Are they intent? Are they meeting your eyes? So on both sides, it's kind of your brain working, and it's work. It takes energy to actually be present. That's why, I mean, meditation takes work. It's not easy. It's one of those things that you have to practice, and this is something. Being present is something you actually have to practice.
Right. So being present, and then, of course, I'm cheating. I'm looking in your book.
That's okay.
Taking in information from others while being non-judgmental. Now, how do you do that? she laughs. That's challenging, not being judgmental, correct? I mean, to be an open channel, easier said than done, Leslie.
Oh, I know. And no matter how long I have done and will do this work, there will be times where the ugly judgmental monster will peek out its head, but I know that's what it is. And being non-judgmental, as a human being, I know we try to do that. We're constantly trying to do that. And in a conversation, we can actually tell when someone's words are coming into us, and all of a sudden we're now having mind chatter. And that's how we know that something is going on. The mind chatter might be, they don't know enough to tell me this. And that's the judgment. And so one of the things that is important is to understand yourself well enough to know, what kind of things am I judgmental about? One of those things that push my buttons. And if you can get a handle on that, when those types of things come up, then you can be very aware and push the judgment aside at that moment. Listening is always a choice, Andrea, and we have to choose in every conversation and every part of every conversation how we are going to listen.
Yeah. And then the third one is acknowledging the speaker in a way that invites communication to continue.
And that's the thing that in watching my grandmother and my parents especially, they would ask many questions, not interrupt, but, oh, that's amazing. How did you do that? And it invited the person who was speaking to continue because they knew that there was someone there who was interested in what they were saying. They would smile. My mom, my gosh, when she would meet eyes with someone, it was like they were locked in and they knew they couldn't get out, so they might as well keep on staying in that conversation because she was just so insatiably curious.
Right.
I mean, this is a woman who in her 80s was editing doctoral theses because she was such a curious person. And when you got her in a conversation, believe me, the gain 20 questions, that was never enough questions.
Yeah. Wow. They're wonderful. They sound just wonderful, your parents.
Yes, indeed. I was a very, very lucky person. And I wanted to make sure that what came of that in terms of communication and listening was something that other people could grab onto and bring into their own families and their own companies. And one of the things that, in terms of the four keys, I think because in hearing you don't have a choice, unless you've got earplugs in, you don't have a choice, it's coming in. But with listening, because it is a process and a skill, we are constantly at choice as to how effectively we are going to listen. So those four keys, being present, taking in information from others and not being judgmental, acknowledging the speaker in a way that invites communication, and waiting for the period at the end of the sentence before formulating a reply. If all that is taken away from someone reading my book or listening to our conversation, if those four things get integrated into their being, their listening will have grown by leaps and bounds as they continue to practice that.
Yeah, that's interesting, because the comment that you made about your grandmother, where you talked about memory. Oh, she must have a great memory. And you said it doesn't really have anything to do with memory. It's, but memory has to be in there someplace, right? You remembered the connection or the...
Sure.
The conversation.
Sure. But that connection never would have been made if you hadn't had what I called a kind of an open road for that piece of information to come in and all the way in to where your memory does reside. I mean, Andre, I know you know this because we've all been through it. If we're in a new group of people and we have to introduce ourselves, what happens is that people start introducing themselves and we're so concentrating on what we're about to say. Do we remember the other people's names?
Right.
Probably not. And that's because we were multitasking in our own way and not actually truly, deeply, effectively listening to that person who was introducing themselves. And that's just a quickie.
Yeah, I guess we're anxious, like, what am I going to say? So you're so,
right.
You're so caught up in, oh, goodness, I wasn't prepared for this. Let's see. You know, you're doing that, right? That's the kind of the process you're going through. Meanwhile, the other people are speaking, and you're not listening.
And that is one of the barriers that I talk about, which is the performance anxiety barrier. And it's something that a lot of people have in a heightened degree. The example that I gave happens to pretty much everyone. But the performance anxiety barrier can be debilitating if it's not recognized and some tools put in place to allow the person to push it aside when necessary.
So someone says to you, Leslie, I want to be a better listener. How do I catch myself? How do I stop myself from making those common mistakes that prevent me from being a good listener?
Well, I would say a couple of things. First of all, reading my book would be a good place to start. Only because it really goes through, and we talked about the importance and the value of listening, but it really goes into depth in a very easy way about all of the barriers that can get in the way of your listening. And you will see yourself in some, and you will not see yourself in others. And one of the things that I wanted to make sure happened in this book was not only you can read about a barrier that, oh my gosh, that fits me to a T, but it also tells you where it comes from. And it also tells you how you can actually mitigate those barriers, understand that they're up for you, and how to push them aside in the moment. But beyond that, Andrea, one of the things that I really suggest to people is to have a listening buddy. And it is someone who you tell, look, I want to become a more effective listener, and this is what I want to do. I'm creating a plan, and I want you to help me and watch my behavior and listen to me and listen to me listening to others and just be my buddy and kind of debrief with me afterwards. And if you'd like, I'll do the same for you. And it's wonderful because it's not that it becomes a game, but it becomes something where there's a little bit more of hyper-awareness about what's going on with your mind chatter. Because usually we don't think about our mind chatter at all.
Right, yeah. Well, we're too in the mind, I guess, to think about it, right? So now let's talk about some of the internal and external listener barriers, hearing barriers, visual barriers, physical barriers. We kind of touched upon it, but if you could be a little more specific.
Sure.
Because those that creates blockages, right? And
oh, my goodness. If you ever go to a restaurant with me, I have to be facing the wall. I can't be facing out to the restaurant or looking at chefs doing their thing. For me, visual distraction is horrific in terms of me being able to listen effectively. And I know this about myself. So when we're talking about visual barriers, that's a biggie for me. Hearing barriers. If you've got a jackhammer or an air conditioner going on and you cannot hear, literally hear, you can't listen. So you either change where you are, or if you're having a one-on-one conversation with someone, ask them if you can change where you are so that you can listen to them well. And most people will say absolutely, because they feel honored by the fact that you want to change where you're having the conversation so you can listen to them. That they probably haven't heard before. And then the physically effective barriers, which is what I call too hot, too cold. It's the three little pigs, you know. Too hot, too cold, just right. And what can you do to make sure that you are comfortable in any situation where you are going to be listening? Because as we all know, we can only listen if our body is not speaking louder than who's talking to us.
Hmm.
If we're uncomfortable, you know?
Right, because then you're focused, oh, I'm too hot. You know, you're in that situation.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Right, and I'm a person who, in the back of my car is a sweater and a little pillow, because I don't know when I'm going to a seminar or something like that what I'm going to run into. So I actually have that kind of in my car's back pocket. So if I have to run out and get it, I'm going to be comfortable, so I will be able to listen.
Right.
So those are the external barriers. And for some people, it's not a problem at all.
Right.
For my mom and for me, it's the external was absolutely one of our top barriers when I created the listening effectiveness profile. She got back to me by telephone one day and she said, "You got me pegged, kiddo." And the first one was the external listening barriers. So then we have internal. And those are a little bit more difficult to figure out sometimes, because sometimes we can't get inside our own head to see it. But we have judging and weighing barriers. And a simple example of that is when my 13-year-old nephew was on his skateboard and came up to a group of us during a reunion, and he stopped and he was listening. I was saying inside my head, he's not going to have anything important to say. He's 13 years old and he's got pants that are down to his hips and blah, blah, blah. Well, he listened for about 3 or 4 minutes and he opened up his mouth and came out with a complete pearl of wisdom. And in that day, I stopped judging people in terms of age, young or old. That just wasn't an area of judgment anymore for me. And there are lots more like that, but that's just an example of judging based on who a person is or who you think that person is or who they have been in the past. And you got to come fresh to whatever a person is saying. Keep the thought process and the ears open.
Yeah. So let's talk about power and control barriers and interrupting. I mean, certainly, if you're in a conversation, there must be a good way to interrupt, right? Where you're...
Oh, yes. Absolutely. So here's the thing. The power and control barrier is going to be... interrupting happens here, and it also happens in performance anxiety, and I'll separate them out. In terms of power and control, if you grew up in a family where the power in the family was the person who was speaking, and the only way in your family to be heard was to literally take the power, there's a probability that this will be a barrier for you, because what you're doing is listening for the opening for you to take back the power and start speaking again. So that's what you're listening for. You're listening for the pause in something that someone says, or the moment that period happens in a nanosecond, you've taken it. And interrupting is one of the big things that a power and control person does. And they don't really, most of the time, they don't even realize that that's what's happening. It's just that is the way they survived their own childhood and family. And when I say survive, I don't mean it in a, oh, I survived childhood. But, you know, growing up, and being in a family is a very delicate function or dysfunction. And depending on what the family was like, that's where your basic listening barriers pretty much exist. The great news is that you can lessen the effect on you.
Now, I'm wondering, and now without sounding snobbish or judgmental, we've all... run into people who just talk to be heard, if you know what I mean.
And I do.
So they may not be saying anything, and I say this with quotes, with that, you know, nothing of substance. They're just talking because they want to hear themselves talk, and they don't want to listen to anyone else. Now, how do you handle that situation? How do you handle that? Because
it's a great question, because there are so many people who really have to deal with it. I find that the reason that people who are constant talkers are constant talkers is because they are not listened to, whether it was as a child at home or in a marriage or significant other situation where the other person does not listen to them. So they will take any opportunity to speak and speak and speak and speak. And I, you know, this, we're social animals. And as social animals, we have a tendency to speak about ourselves 60% of the time. Well, if you don't have anybody at home that's listening, that 60% is out there in the world. And that's where we end up being the person that has to listen. So what I normally suggest to people is if you have that kind of a situation, find something in what they are saying to ask a question about. Not to get more story, but the type of question that will have them reflect on what the story is that they're talking about, or have them stop and actually think about what it is that they're saying. Because if they have someone who is asking a good question, they will rise to the occasion and give you an answer that will break that monotone, story of the year that lasts a year. It'll break that and keep up with the questions.
Yeah. Because the thing is, if they're talking all the time, they're certainly not great listeners, right?
No. No, you can't listen if you're talking. It's just physically impossible.
But they may think they're great listeners. They're too busy talking about, yeah, I'm a great listener, and I'm blah, blah, blah. They're going, we've all met people like that.
We have.
So how do you know when you're being a bad listener, and how do you know when you're being a good listener?
That's a great question. I think you know that you're being a bad listener when you really have a lot of mind chatter and wish you were doing something else or being somewhere else, and you feel bored. All those things are mind chatter that are going on in your brain. Conversely, you know you're being a good listener when you have another question you want to ask, when you want to, or you do, nod your head and smile, when your body is saying to the person that is talking, wow, I'm really interested in what you are saying. And I remember my college roommate's sister was in quantum physics. Now, quantum physics, from this I know nothing. And I totally did not understand it. And I looked at her and I really wanted to understand it. And I wanted to listen to her, but I looked at her and I said, dumb it down. I said, please, I want to really understand your passion. But dumb it down for me. But it was immediate when I realized what was happening. I realized she was talking at too high a level and that I would be bored and look bored, and I certainly did not want to do that at all to her. So I asked her, sometimes listening takes courage.
Right.
To be able to say, dumb it down for me. And it actually makes the person who's speaking feel great, because they realize that you care to actually understand what it is that they're saying. What a novel thought.
Right. And now, okay, so how do we learn to stay open and listen to criticism? Because when someone is critiquing you, you can become defensive and close off. But yet, if it's someone that cares about you and it's constructive criticism, there's value. There's always value in listening. But
yes.
But even more so, because they think, at least, they're trying to help. So, but how do you stay open when you're listening to criticism?
Well, wow, Andrea, that's an awesome question. I think the first thing that I would say is remember that the person does care about you. But also be willing to be courageous and say, and this I've done many times, what you just said or how you said it hit me wrong. Could you rephrase that? It's almost like the do-over. without saying do-over. Right. But it allows the person who's giving you the critique or the criticism, it allows them a few moments to say, ooh, maybe the way I said it is getting their hackles up, and I don't want to do that, so I think I should rephrase. Well, sometimes if you are actually someone who is paying attention to body language and you're the person giving the criticism, you may actually see it land in that other person and realize that you have to rephrase on your own. But if you're the listener who's being critiqued, then it is important for you to be able to say, could you rephrase that for me? And that is a wonderful tool to let the person know that something's kind of off in how they're giving you the criticism, and it's also allowing you to stand up at the same moment.
Yeah, yeah, beautiful. So now, how important is it to suspend self from the listening, and how do you suspend yourself from the listening while being an active listener or an active participant in the communication process?
When you are talking about suspending self, I think what I'm trying to say in the suspending self is do your best to, in the process of listening, understand that listening is not about you. It's about the other person. And when you can do a great job of suspending self enough to realize that when you are a listener, it's not about you at all, it's all about the other person, then you are so on the road to being effective in terms of your listening skills. People will realize it, and as it happened during my college years in my dorm room, my roommate and I had an open door policy. And believe me, getting our homework done was not easy because people knew that they were going to be listened to, that we would suspend self and allow them to be center stage. Yeah. And that's really what's critical.
Right. And so I wanted to ask you about propaganda in politics and just listening. I mean, whatever you want to share about that topic.
Well, I think what's happened as a communications person is I have been watching for a year this amazing movement towards not listening and using the type of words that will incite the fight or flight and emotional part of your brain instead of engaging your critical thinking part of your brain. And that is happening because of word choice. It's happening because of strategies of name calling. It's strategies of what is called glittering generalities, which is, I'm going to say this and it's going to mean nothing, to your point of there's no substance there.
Right.
And what's been happening, and I'm not going to say it's on one side of the aisle or the other, because we have Senate races and we have House races, and of course we've got the presidential race and governor races, you name it, that what's happening is it seems to have been decided that it's okay to communicate this way, that it's okay to not be substantive. It's okay to appeal to the emotions and the fight or flight parts of our brain and completely ignore the critical thinking part of the electorate's brain. It seems to be okay to do that. I don't know what's happened in the last 12 to 16 years that it's been such a huge shift.
Yeah. I also think technology has a lot to do with the shift too. Overall, I think that, you know what I mean? Because it's, you know, people are on the radio and they're on the internet and they're on YouTube, they're here and there, and they want these glittering, I forget how you word it, but
glittering generalities.
Yeah, if they repeat them over and over and over again, it doesn't matter whether you're turning on your TV, your radio, you're on your phone. You know, these glittering generalities keep coming up.
Yep. Yep. And one of the things, Andrea, is that we have a couple of generations that don't understand that way back when there were three main television stations, and gone are the days of the domination of the big three and right. the fact-based reporting that they really strove to maintain. When we were getting our news that way, there was considered a more fair and balanced type news reporting. And I think that Edward R. Murrow and Cronkite would be looking at us and saying, "Oi, what the heck is going on?" And technology is absolutely a huge part of it, because anyone and everyone can have an opinion that comes out as fact if it's on YouTube or on the internet. Don't you know that everything on the internet is true?
Right. Yeah, I know. I also, before we went on the air, we were talking a little bit about reading and listening. And I just wondered if you wanted to comment on that. I'm trying to remember how I phrased it. How does reading relate to listening at all?
There are so many facets of that particular question. I would say, first of all, we are in a short attention span world. And even when you are looking at a magazine ad, you are sharpening your reading, just like you can sharpen your listening for facts or emotions. You can sharpen your reading to pick up only those things that you want to pick up. So you're not picking up the whole. You're only picking up a portion of it.
Right.
And the short attention span thing is really affecting so many things. I can't imagine having a student want to sit down and read Dickens. Or even going so far as reading F. Scott Fitzgerald, they may do Hemingway because the sentences are short enough. And the same is true of listening. If you have someone who is so used to the 60-second or 7-minute segment, right. How much are you going to keep their attention after that? And the same is true of reading. I think it's true in both situations. These chapter books for kids have gotten them into the habit of, a chapter is 3 pages, and then I can put the book down.
Right.
You know, it just doesn't omen well long-term, either for reading or for listening.
Right. Yeah. It's just wonderful work that you're doing. If you could just tell us about some of the self-management tools that you mentioned.
Certainly. I think first and foremost, awareness, as they all say, is half the battle. And I think if you are aware of what's going on, then you can choose to listen or choose not to listen. But at least you're making a choice. Pay attention to that internal dialogue, that mind chatter that's going on. I think the third and one of the most important, stop talking. Give people a chance to talk. You might find out that they have something that you really want to know about and will make you smarter. be comfortable with silence. In America, that's difficult because we feel that we have to fill up that silence. It's okay to let a few moments rest between someone saying something and you're responding. Give yourself a chance to respond. Keep eye contact. As a listener, if you do not keep eye contact, you're going to wander. And even if it's someone who is up on a stage, don't let your eyes wander. Keep your eyes on that speaker, because you'll actually get more out of it seeing what the body language and the facial expressions are for that speaker. Watch your own body language. What are you saying to the person who's talking to you by your body language? These are all things that are part of the conversational give and take and back and forth. Give feedback. And by feedback, I don't mean full sentences, because then that would be interrupting, but the aha, the hum, the oh wow is perfectly legitimate. Your body language says a lot, and you can ask clarifying questions because it tells them that you're listening. Feel free to rephrase when it's time. And in order for you, and hopefully if you get a listening buddy, to really elevate, you can do some role-playing. And role-playing is a lot of fun, especially if we're talking about the person who just talks and talks and talks. Work on how you can look interested. Work on how you can ask questions. Role-playing is a lot of fun. And I carry a little spiral notebook, just a little one with a pen, because when I have one everywhere, in my car, in my purse, you name it, because I find that when I'm in a conversation with someone and they've said something great and I don't want to forget it, but I do want to keep on listening, is I will write down the two or three words they said, so that then when they are finished, I can say, hey, you said, tell them what they said, and say, what really intrigued me was. But I'm not formulating my response when I'm writing down those words. I'm just saying, putting down the words that they used. And that will get me going when they're done, and I will know what it was that they said that was so important. And find a way to be interested in the subject. Sometimes people start talking about subjects you have no desire to learn about. But I think it's really important to realize that you never know when something is going to come in handy. Hey, you may end up on Jeopardy, and one of those $1,000 questions is something that you learned exactly when you were in conversation with someone.
Right.
Yeah. I find that insatiable curiosity is something to be honed and worked on, because that actually it makes you a great listener to be curious.
Yeah, so beautiful, your work. I'm so moved by it. Now, do you have anything to share that we have not covered, and do you have any closing remarks or reflections?
Well, I would say the only thing is if you go to listentosucceed.com, you can check out the book and the assessment that I should let folks know that you can actually learn what your barriers are to effective listening so you can start working on them. But the thing that I really love to make sure that folks understand, it was put beautifully into a book by Carl Menninger, great psychologist, and he said, listening is a magnetic and strange thing, a creative force. The friends who listen to us are the ones we move toward. When we are listened to, it creates us, makes us unfold and expand. That's the power of listening.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I was going to read a quote from your book, but I don't think I'll do it now.
Sorry.
That's okay. But I will read. I was going to read. But there's a quote that you have on the back of your book from Winston Churchill, mm-hmm. that says, courage is what it takes to stand up and speak. And courage is also what it takes to sit down and listen. Wow, that is so powerful.
And I'm looking at who that was, which is Winston Churchill. And I think, going to the politics end of thing, I hope that some people would actually read that quote and pay attention to it.
Yeah, let's hope, right? Let's hope that people listen to you. Listen to, go to your site and read your book, Listen to Succeed, How to Identify and Overcome Barriers to Effective Listening. It's so important. And can you imagine what the world would be if we were all effective listeners?
I got to tell you, that's why I really am doing this work. That's so what I wish for all of us.
Yeah. Well, it's been a real pleasure, Leslie, listening to you.
Well, Andre, it's been a wonderful pleasure listening to you. This has been a delightful conversation from stem to stern, as they say.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you again for this wonderful work, and I really, really am grateful to you for writing this important book.
Thank you so much.
We need it. Thank you so much, Leslie.
You are welcome.
Take care.
You too.
I would like to thank our guest, author Leslie B. Shore, for being here to discuss her book, Listen to Succeed, How to Identify and Overcome Barriers to Effective Listening. For more information, please visit www.listentosucceed.com. I would like to encourage all of our listeners to practice the universal law of giving by doing whatever you can to reach out to help others. To each and every one of you out there, thank you so much for joining me, Andrea Garrison, and connecting here online with Andrea. Listen to me live or listen to the archive. Just continue connecting heart to heart. But in the meantime, do whatever you can to reach out to help others and never underestimate the power of a friendly smile. Take care.
Thank you for connecting to Online with Andrea with your host, Andrea Garrison.